Hello and welcome to the Mental Health Book Club podcast with your hosts Sydney Timmins and Becky Lawrence. We would like to take this opportunity to let you know that we will be covering a diverse range of mental health topics that may be distressing to some listeners. You can find a full list of the topics being covered in each episode in the show notes. Please check the show notes before listening to any of our episodes. Welcome to the Mental Health Book Club podcast with Sydney Timmins. Today, I'm really excited to be able to welcome onto the podcast Dan Udale, who is a fellow podcaster. So he's kind of getting the interview treatment from me. So this is his first time, I think, being recorded for a podcast where he is the interviewee. And I found Dan's podcast when I was looking on iTunes for something about identity. So I've been explaining to you all out there that I'm having issues with understanding who I am and finding out about myself. And the Know Yourself podcast popped up, and that was run by Dan, and I downloaded it and I really enjoyed it. And I thought that I would reach out and see if Dan wanted to come to talk to me. And he said yes. Woohoo! And so I'd like to welcome onto the podcast Dan Udale. Thank you so much for coming onto the podcast.
It's an absolute pleasure. No, appreciate you reaching out. It's just, yeah, it's weird being on the other side of the fence or on the hot seat or whatever you want to call it. But yeah, it's great to be here.
Who knows? I'm going to quiz you. No, I'm not. It's all right. I promise. I'll be gentle. So I thought I'd start off with asking you to give us a little bit of background about yourself. So I know that you have had some issues with your own mental health. And you started the podcast as a result of wanting to talk more openly and be part of the mental health community, which I think is a fantastic idea. And I think trying to get everyone in the mental health community to kind of work together, pushing the mental health message out there, is a fantastic opportunity. So go for it. Tell us a bit about you.
Yeah. So I guess like my kind of like origin story, or like where it all started, was, I was just in high school, actually. I was in my last year, so I was 16 years old, in the middle of my GCSEs, and I didn't have a care in the world. I was just like, I thought I was just a regular guy. I'd never had any problems in the past with like mental health or anything. I literally just thought I was a normal 16-year-old kid. And so I was walking through the park one day, and I was chaperoning a girl home. So I thought I was a bit of a ladies man, so
nothing wrong with that.
So I'm walking this girl through the park, and I see these like kids the opposite side of the canal, like sort of hurling abuse at the girl. So I kind of thought like nothing of it. I was like, do you know those guys? And she was kind of like, no. So we just carried on walking, and the path that I was on intersected with a bridge that met the other side of the canal. So naturally, we ended up meeting the guys that had been like hurling abuse. And basically, one of them approached me and, he asked me if I'd been like saying, like shouting stuff. And I was like, no, you guys were shouting stuff. And he was like, well, I think you've been doing it. So basically, I want to like kick the crap out of you. So I was like, look, I'm not interested. I've never been in a fight in my life. So like, and he was like, no, this is happening right now. So I literally said to the girl I was with, I was like, right, just go. Cause like, I have no idea what's about to happen. And whilst I was turned like round speaking to her, I literally just had this like fist, like hit me in the face. And that's kind of when it started. Like, I don't know how long it lasted for, cause all like the adrenaline kicked in. But like, I just remember like, being up against the side of a car, like having the crap kicked out of me. And then it was kind of all over, and they ran away. And yeah, I just kind of ran home. I got my cheek looked at because it was quite sore from the first punch. But, I was a little bit shook up, but I was kind of ready to go back out in the world, and I didn't think anything different from it. Mm. And I went out into the same park the next day, so the very next day. And I went fishing with my stepdad at the time, because everyone kind of said to me, like, just get back out into the real world. You'll be fine. It was only like a punch sort of thing or whatever. It wasn't a big deal. You'll be fine. So I'm out fishing, and I literally turn around to get some bait to put on my fishing rod. And I literally see walking past me the guy who like assaulted me. And I just remember feeling like I was drowning, but not being able to swim. And I was very much just rooted to the spot. I felt like I was stuck. I couldn't move. I couldn't speak. I couldn't think. I could feel all my veins. It felt like they were pumping with like electricity.
Mm.
And it felt like there was magma in my stomach, and I felt really sick. And it was a bit of a scary experience. So it kind of meant that I spend the next sort of like 6 months or so like in my room and not really wanted to go outside. I was really afraid of what might happen. So that was kind of where it all started for me. Yeah.
And it's completely understandable that that happened for you, that reaction. You went through such horrific, traumatic event in your life. And in some ways, people were just like, oh, yeah, you'll be fine. Off you go. Don't worry about it. But then the very next day, seeing the person who attacked you, I would have probably freaked out a lot more than what you did, I think. I don't know how you would able to leave the house personally after what you went through.
It's kind of weird, like I'd almost kind of like, I don't know, like tricked myself into thinking it wasn't a big deal, because like,
well, like, everyone was telling you it wasn't a big deal.
Yeah, like I kind of just believed it. And but then the next time I was faced with like an intimidating situation, which just so happened to probably be the worst case scenario, you know, it just meant it kind of solidified what was probably happening in my head, which was, you know, it was kind of what was happening was a belief system was forming that anytime I was in a situation that would, from that point onwards, be confrontational or like intimidating, it meant that the exact same thing was happening.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, it effectively caused what would be quite a difficult time of my life. So effectively, from the age of like 16 onwards, I just dealt with this thing that was like there. Like, I just thought I was different than everyone else. I thought that I was like a freak of nature. I didn't think that anyone would understand what was going on. I thought that I was the only person in the world that felt the way I did, you know, being afraid to go outside. I felt so guilty as well, because, you know, I would be at a family meal and like I might see someone completely unrelated. They might not even be looking at me, and I would see them and they would, in my mind, look similar to the guy that assaulted me, or they would have similar clothes, or they might not even look like him or anything. If they just looked like they might be a bad person or they might want to harm me, it kind of like, it would freak me out, and it would send me into like this, I would just become really irritable. I would become really angry. I would become, you know, very sort of insular. I wouldn't want to talk to anyone. I would literally just do everything I can to leave that place. And like I say, that's kind of where the guilt came from, because I felt so bad for like leaving like family meals or leaving house parties, or, you know, I'd be out shopping with friends and I'd literally just be like, I'm going. And they'd be like, what? You know, and they'd either come with me or I would like sort of ditch them. And I just felt so bad. I felt like the liability all the time for this invisible thing that I couldn't explain, or I didn't even understand myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was very much what was going on at the time, really. And I guess it all kind of reached like a boiling point. I probably had some things in my life that weren't right already, which probably didn't help. So I started an apprenticeship at the age of 18 at like, you know, a small business. And unfortunately, I'd got myself into quite a large amount of debt in payday loans when I was at that company. So, you know, I literally, the one day I had a phone call came into the office, and it was my boss's wife that answered the phone. And she handed over the phone to me, and I'll never forget the conversation that I had. Because I answered the phone and it was literally like the debt collectors like going, we literally want our money now. Like, otherwise we're going to like start turning up at your house and where you work and like in person demanding it. There's moments like that in your life that happen, and they make you realize like there's no amount of burying your head in the sand that's going to make this go away now. Like, you literally have to face this problem.
So,
I was actually really lucky because whilst I was getting spammed with phone calls from debt collecting companies, because it wasn't just one company that I owed money to, it was about five or six. So I was lucky enough that I got a company, they reached out to me and they said, look, you've propped up on our database. We can tell that you have got these loans. Let us consolidate it for you and we'll act as a third party in between, you know, the companies that want their money back, and it'll take all this headache away and you just have to pay one monthly amount, low costs, you know, and obviously you'll pay us a fee on top. And I literally just went, yes.
Yeah, like, take the stress away, please.
Sign me up.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what happened. It was a massive weight off my shoulders because I'd been kind of carrying that around and this like silent thing that was happening to me. Mm. Like, a large reason about why I got into so much debt is because I actually had a taxi driver on retainer and I was only earning like 500 quid a month as an apprentice. And I had this taxi driver on a retainer because I was afraid to get a train or bus to where I was. Now, the place that I worked as well was like, unfortunately, out in the middle of the sticks. So it kind of meant really it was either a bus or taxi or cycle. So it just ended up being a taxi. And yeah, that's how I ended up sort of accruing so much debt, because I was just paying this guy like constantly to ferry me to my job. Like, you know, it was like 10 times a week. You know, it just really racked up.
But it's understandable as well after what you went through that would be your preferred mode of transport, because it meant you didn't have to face potential threats.
Yeah, that was exactly my thinking. Like, but you know, again, like, I felt really guilty. I felt really stupid that I got myself in that situation. I felt like I'd let a lot of people down, including myself, because you know, like, I just felt ashamed. I felt like, who allows themselves to get into this situation? And it was very much, you know, blaming myself and kicking myself down even further.
Yeah.
So after that, I left that company and I went to work for my first sort of big organization. So this is when I'm sort of like age like 20 now. And it was about 6 months into working for that organization. I was not really in a good place, like mentally, really. I was still really struggling to come to terms with what was actually happening to me and the reality of trying to live, like, I'm a bit of a social butterfly.
Mm.
So trying to live that like lifestyle and keep up this like act of like pretending I'm that sort of person was really quite difficult. And I still very much blame myself for what had happened with getting myself into debt. And I was actually in a situation where I'd gotten myself back there as well. So I was 6 months into working for this really big company, and I remember just being really, like, having a really difficult time with it. And that was kind of like the time where I was really starting to get like suicidal thoughts as well, for the very first time in my life. It just felt like I'd been backed into a corner, and like it very much like felt like it was the way out, you know. You know, it wasn't too depressing in my own head. It was just kind of like logical, like, you know.
Yeah.
I got like all going on for my life. So like, what's the point sort of thing?
Mm.
But yeah, like, I was lucky because I actually went over to my dad's, because like, I've never lived with my dad. I've always gone to see him on the weekends.
Yeah.
And he basically just pulled me to one side the one weekend and just said like, there's something really different about you. He said, you know, I can tell, like, there's something not quite right, you know, and not in a good way. Like,
yeah.
I think you need to go and see someone.
Wow.
And, like, I remember at the time, like, the thoughts that were running through my head were, F you.
Yeah.
Were, like, how dare you? That was what genuinely ran through my mind. And I think something maybe close to that was, like, bubbling on the surface. And so yeah, I kind of like, I went away feeling sort of like defensive about it and a bit upset, because like, it was hard to have someone actually say what was probably very obvious. Yeah, it was just it's like when someone points out like an insecurity or something like that. It feels like someone's poking a sore spot. But I'll never forget that, because what happened next was like probably the most important thing. So I was literally at work about a month or so afterwards, and I just remember everything was coming to a boiling point, really. Like, I was having problems with work, probably because of my own mindset and, you know, the difficulties I was experiencing, like, mentally in and outside of work. And I remember, you know, I had, like debt collectors, like, calling me regularly, like, asking for money. And I was just struggling so much that day. And, like, I had tears in my eyes. And I literally left the office. I just went and took a break. Like, I didn't care what anyone said. And I went outside by the bike shelter. And I just remember, like, thinking, like, it's either going to have to end or something's going to have to change. Mm. And I remember thinking back to what my dad had told me. And that was when I accepted that, yeah, something wasn't right. And I needed to get help. So literally in that moment, I pulled out my phone. I went on counselling directory and I picked the face, because they've all got different like profile pictures, all the different counsellors.
Yeah.
And I literally picked the picture of a counsellor. Looks like they were going to be friendly and like help me. And I literally called. I didn't get through to this lady, but I left a voicemail.
Mm-hmm.
And she eventually got hold of me later on that day. And that's when I started going to counselling. Yeah. And I've been going for 5 years.
All I can say is that, wow, your dad was so observant. Because it's one of those things that I think that generally people out there think that men don't necessarily have this emotional connection with each other. But he could see that you were struggling. And I think that's really amazing. Because I personally didn't have anything like that. No one ever turned around and said, I think you're struggling, you should probably see someone about it. Don't get me wrong, I probably would have had exactly the same reaction as you did. In the moment, I'm like, excuse me, who do you think you are? But yeah. It's just really nice to just highlight that there was someone there that had noticed. And yeah, thank goodness for him.
100%. Literally, like, we always have these, like, really, like, sort of emotional conversations, me and my dad, every now and then.
Yeah.
Because, like, I said to him, like, what you gave me, I can never pay you back. Like, you know, you literally, like, you saved my life. Like,
yeah.
It was, you know, it was literally that straightforward. Like, yeah, it wouldn't have ended well, really, without what he said to me. Yeah, I'll always be grateful for that. Yeah, that was really a really pivotal moment for me. Accepting that there was something wrong, having the humility to be able to go, yeah, you know, I probably need some help. Because the amazing thing is, I'd actually gone to the NHS when I was 19.
Yeah. How did you find that?
It was a really disappointing experience, to be honest. Mm. I basically walked away with a leaflet, and, like, I remember walking out there thinking, like, I don't feel any different. I still want to, like, go home and, like, you know, like, kill myself, like, sort of thing. So, like, it was really sort of, like, uninspiring and, like, really disappointing. So that's why I went private, because I just didn't feel as though I could get any help from them.
Mm.
So,
Which is sad.
For the sort of 5 years or so I've been going to therapy, it's all been private, and it's been with the same therapist, and I've paid for it all out of my own pocket, and I've been going weekly, so, you know, it is quite expensive, but the way I see it is that for anyone that's ever curious about private counsellors, you know, I see it as an investment within myself.
Yeah.
And to be honest, what I've gotten out of it has been priceless. I've very much gone from the point of, like, feeling like I was on the brink to now being very much in control of my life and, you know, being able to manage and be on top of, like, because, you know, I'll never forget the moment that I finally understood what was going on for me. It was almost like a bittersweet moment, because I finally had the sort of, like, not diagnosis, but, like, an explanation of what was going on.
Yeah.
But I'll never forget when my counsellor said to me, like, you know, what you're displaying is very symptomatic of, like, post-traumatic stress disorder and anxiety. But, and she said, you know, it's worth understanding that you'll likely have this for the rest of your life.
Mm.
And it's now very much a part of who you are. And I just remember feeling like absolutely devastated. And I remember like feeling worse for about a month or so. And I was like, isn't therapy meant to make me feel better?
Yeah. You're like, come on, this is meant to be good.
But what she actually did for me was the greatest gift that anyone can do for anyone, really, which is telling it how it is.
Oh, yeah.
And what it actually made me do is, by telling me the harsh truth, it actually made me accept what was going on. And instead of trying to fix what was wrong with me, I finally accepted it and said, like, you know, yeah, it's a part of me. It's cool. Like, I don't need to be afraid of it. I need to be in control of it.
Mm.
And accept that the degree of control that I have on it is entirely down to me and my willingness to work on this, you know, for however long it's going to take.
That's so powerful.
Yeah, yeah. So that's where, like, that was kind of like 6 months in, I got to that point in therapy. And it was, that was again a very pivotal point, because that's when I started really, you know, working with the counselor I had instead of working against her.
Yeah.
You know, really putting in some solid work for the next like 4.5 years, I guess. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you did, because you're still here to tell the tale, and you get to do this fantastic message, like putting the message out there. I mean, the way that you speak, the way that you describe your story is just so heart-wrenching, but at the same time, it's so important to be out there. Because as you said, if you touch one person that then goes, you know what, I'm not alone, other people are going through this kind of stuff, then in some ways that's all you really want, isn't it? I don't know, that's, yeah. Maybe that's just me.
No, 100%. Like, you know, if I'd known what was going on for me, and if I knew that like mental health was such a thing and all of these sorts of intricacies, if I had an awareness of it, I might have acted in a different way, or I might have talked about it with someone sooner if I didn't think I was alone. It was the feeling of being alone that kept me from talking about it, because it made me think that I was broken, and that made me feel like there was a vulnerability within me that I couldn't share with others.
Yeah, definitely. I can understand that 100%. I think that's probably very similar for the way I reacted, because it took me to get to a point where I had attempted suicide before I actually got any help, because I did think that I was the only one going through this kind of stuff.
Oh, geez. So you were in a similar spot.
Yeah. And it's tough, isn't it, when you get to that point that you're like, seriously, something needs to change. But you do kind of go, well, maybe, I don't know, is it, yeah, I'm the only one that has this, therefore I shouldn't tell anyone about it.
Yeah.
That's how I felt, anyway.
It's a very natural leap for someone to make, to be so alone and so isolated. You know, it's just a natural stepping stone to, unfortunately, like, what could be the end of someone's life, you know. But so, you know, really, I started the podcast because, like, I don't know, yeah, I wanted people to have what I got from therapy and also from my training as well, which was awareness and like tools to help, and just hearing another person like talk about it. And then that's when I kind of got the ideas of like of doing interviews, because I thought maybe my story's not enough. Maybe it's better that other people share their stories as well as me. So that's really when I started going heavy on like doing interviews. And I've been lucky enough to like work with some really like special people with like really inspiring stories that have either been on the same sort of vein of like mental health advocacy, or have even done something completely different. Like, you know, like I was really lucky to be able to interview like a Paralympian for Great Britain.
Wow.
So her story was like really inspiring as well. Like, you know, she's not got any mental health issues, so to say, but like, you know, her disability has had a certain impact on her life, and to be able to like overcome that adversity and then go from that to being like, I think she's like a silver medalist in such a short space of time as well, was just really remarkable. And I was really lucky to be able to reach out to her and get an interview. So
exactly. I mean, the podcast world, I think you get to speak to all these fantastic people, and just hearing all of their different stories, and it does make you feel more like you are part of something bigger. Because I do think that with mental ill health, you do start to feel quite isolated just purely by being unwell.
Yeah, 100%. I just think, I think the community online, like certainly on Twitter is where I notice it the most. Mm. The mental health community on there is just so supportive. And there's literally like so many different flavors of, you know, people that have had their own struggles and battles, you know, with mental health. Like I'm starting to learn about other conditions because of people that I've spoken to and just had conversations with. Like, you know, I didn't realize until I had a close friend that sort of reached out to me and spoke to me about it, what the impact of OCD was like on someone's life, for example. And I'm learning about all these sorts of conditions. So if you're someone who is struggling, or you think you might be struggling with, like, you know, mental health issues, I'd really like urge you to like jump on Twitter, search under the hashtag of mental health, and you'll be able to find so many amazing podcasts and blogs and just advocates that will be able to point you in the right direction in terms of resources. You know, they'll really embrace you and make you feel as though you're not alone, is what I would say.
Definitely, I would wholeheartedly agree with that. Definitely have a look, because we're there, we're here to listen, I think, as well. I think that's what's really, really important, is that people are there, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, there's literally a blog that I saw the other day, which was like, it was something like 5 tips on like reducing your anxiety. So like, there's people out there that have experienced these different things, and they really want to like help people, you know, in any way, shape or form. There's like vloggers, there's podcasters like us that, you know, are really just sharing like lots of valuable resource in terms of the information of their experiences. Like, yeah, I really just advise like people to take a look at that. And like, you know, I'd also urge you to look at your circle that you've got around you and assess, if you've not told anyone what's going on for you, I'd really urge you to like assess and evaluate who you can trust, and, you know, who you trust with your life, because this information for you is your life. Like, your mental health issue feels so sensitive and important for you. You need to be able to trust that information in the hands of someone that's going to handle it delicately and that you can talk to about it.
So in terms of taking your experience, because you have taken what has happened and in some ways turned it into a positive, because you decided to train as a therapist yourself.
Yeah.
Which I think is fantastic, by the way, because I absolutely adore listening to you. Your voice is so relaxing. So I'm like, yay! I like that idea. So can you tell us a bit about that? That'd be awesome.
Yeah, of course. So it was really interesting, actually, because I would say, you know, within like 2 years of therapy, like, I very much had my PTSD and anxiety under control.
Wow.
You know, I'd learnt like the techniques, and like breathing was so important because it stops you from having attacks.
Yeah.
And I'd learnt, you know, I was starting to really push myself at, like, you know, catching the train instead of getting a taxi somewhere. And, you know, I was starting to do stuff on my own so I could leave that part of my life and manage it on my own without taking it to therapy now. So really, I started trying to fix some of the long-term stuff, because I think there was some stuff from, it was probably fair to say there's probably stuff from my childhood, and also just general stuff that was there that needed to be talked about that I think was fundamentally sort of broken in my life. So I spent the next kind of like couple of years like figuring out like who the hell I was. Like, that's why the podcast is called like Know Yourself, because that's really the bulk of my therapy has actually been about figuring out who I am. It was so messy inside my head, and I had so many different opinions of different people telling me to be a certain way. It really triggered off this journey of like, yeah, like, who's Dan? Like, what does he want in life? Like, you know, what does he like? What does he not like? And picking that apart from what I'd kind of created, because the life I was kind of living before was, what does everyone else want me to do? Like,
yeah.
Like, the reason I went into the corporate world is because my dad did that and I thought that would make him happy. Like, there were so many things like that that were broken that needed to be assessed. You know, I was making myself miserable and not even knowing it. So, like I say, the next kind of like 3 years of therapy went along those sorts of lines. And it was last year in a therapy session, I was talking with like, you know, my counselor, and I'd really said to her, like, you know, I'm done with 9 to 5 now. I think I know that for sure. I think, you know, whatever happens, I think I'm starting to understand that working in that sort of environment is never going to make me happy. And I said, like, I really want to start thinking about my career now and like doing something that I actually want to do instead of what I think will make other people happy. And she said, Dan, like, you're really good with people. So she said, whatever you do, it has to be to do with people.
Mm.
And I sat there thinking for a minute, and I looked at her and I said, it's not as if you can get a job talking to people, though. And I literally burst out laughing because I realized that that's what a therapist does.
You're like, I'm missing something here. I bet she was like, Dan.
Exactly. And like, we both like burst out laughing together. And like, I said to her, like, I know what I want to do now. And I said, I want to be a therapist like you. And she, like, her face just like lit up, and she went, oh, that, she said, that's just absolutely amazing. She said, that is just like wonderful news. And literally I went away, and that moment was so powerful for me. I literally went away. I looked up online some evening courses that I could attend, and I signed up for one straight away.
Wow, that's brilliant.
I went on that course that lasted for 3 months. And then earlier this year, I finished a course which was a little bit longer. It lasted for 7 months, and I passed that. So I got my 2 certificates, and all I need to do now is go to university, and then I'll be able to practice as a counsellor.
Fantastic. And I think you're going to make a fantastic counsellor, just because you also have that experience of having had some mental health problems yourself. Mm. And I think that in itself is also really powerful, because you can really empathize with the people that you're going to be seeing, but also bring your caring nature to the situation as well. Just literally from listening to you on your podcast, listening to you speak right now, I can definitely see that this is such a fantastic move for you. And it must be so empowering to go, you know what? This is what I'm going to do. This is what I want to do.
Thank you so much. No, that means a lot to hear that. Thank you. Yeah, it is empowering is the word, because I literally, like, now that I'm doing something that I actually want to do and something that makes me happy, like that moment where we both burst out laughing, like myself and my therapist, like when we burst out laughing, that was really me going, it's actually okay to want to do this job. It's not like a bad thing to, if talking to people is like what I want to do, then that's okay. Like, that's absolutely fine. And I knew that I've always kind of known that I've been all right with people and, you know, been able to get along with people and to a certain degree have understood them. And I also have enjoyed like the 5 years of therapy that I've had. Although there's times where, you know, even now after 5 years, like I'm not trying to hide anything. Like, you know, there's some sessions where you really do poke sore spots, and it can really make you question what makes up the fabric of who you are.
Mm.
But those almost like crisis points are like where the best therapy work happens, because you really figure out who you are. And I get so much value out of that, and I've got so much passion for it that I actually want to share that with other people, and I want the same satisfaction and rush and sense of fulfillment that I get from helping myself understand more about myself and being able to navigate my life without having to constantly question myself and think, like, be in the dark about who I actually am as a person.
Mm.
I want the same thing for other people, to be able to rid themselves of that and really just be the captain of their own ship and steer themselves, like, in life. You know, I genuinely feel like my actions that I take day to day are me manipulating the world instead of my life being, you know, manipulated by the world, if that makes sense.
No, that does make sense. Makes absolute sense. I think for me, I have only recently, and it's taken quite a few years, so I've been in therapy for over 6 years now. But for me, it's kind of only now started for that realization to kick in that perhaps I need to be more authentic to who I am by just expressing that there are or have been problems. I mean, I recently went and attended the Mental Health First Aid course for adults.
Oh, wow.
It's a fantastic course. If you ever get a chance to do it, I would highly recommend it.
And yeah, I'd love to do something like that.
Yeah, it's really, really good. And I went in and I was like, right, hi, everybody. I have borderline personality disorder. I've suffered with depression, anxiety. I've attempted suicide. And they were just kind of sat there looking at me like, oh my goodness. And I'm like, look, I'm just going to be as open as I can and just tell you my experience. And I think that was the first time that I ever had felt accepted by a group of people for being truly me.
They weren't judging you because they're there for their own reasons as well.
Exactly.
To do with mental health. I love that you brought that up because I actually had a very similar moment. Since I started therapy, like, I was starting to tell more and more people about what was going on for me because I was becoming more comfortable with it. However, I never really opened up the way I did, even in therapy to some extent, because the people that I met on my counselling course, you really get to know each other.
Yeah.
Like, they know stuff about me that, like, no one knows.
You're like, now, people, don't go sharing that.
Like, they could destroy me, these people. No, it's like, it's really great. Like, you all share really deep and meaningful things. It brings you really close to each other. But what it also means is that it gives you a sense of what it's like to be truly authentic and vulnerable with another person. And to not be burnt by it, because you all are in the same boat. You want to help each other and you want to, you know, become counsellors and, you know, that sort of thing. And it's actually really helped me. Like, authenticity is, like, really one of my top things now. Like, the principle I sort of strive towards. I feel as though, you know, sometimes it's difficult to have conversations with people that can be, like, confrontational or whatever.
Completely.
But, like, when you have authenticity in the front of your mind, when you realize what you're actually doing is speaking how you feel and you're not trying to start an argument or, you know, that sort of thing, that was like a really big moment for me. I've always been a very non-confrontational sort of person. Like, someone could, like, spill boiling hot coffee on me and I'd be like, have
it's
a nice day.
It's all good. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Whereas, like, now I kind of feel like, you know, like, it's okay to go, like, like, what the hell, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Excuse me.
But, like, yeah, I just it's one of the greatest things. And also for me, one of the best things that I learned through counselling and outside of it through my training. Because one of the things I learned training to be a counsellor was how to journal.
Mm.
You know, journaling's, I don't know if anyone's ever heard of it. You literally just, it's not difficult. Just grab, like, a A5 pad of paper or A4, whatever. Or I sometimes do mine on my laptop.
Mm.
And literally, it's about you kind of almost talking to yourself and explaining, like, and articulating how you feel about something. So, for example, you might be like, you know, I'm really struggling with work at the moment. I've got this on my mind. You know, I haven't been on top of my game recently, and that could be because of this. And you're very much just throwing out what's in your head and speaking to yourself in a very honest way. And you'll find that once you start doing that, you start to develop this certain sense of self-awareness where, you know, you might be having a bad day. And before, you might not have known why you were having a bad day. But because you've been able to articulate your own emotions to yourself for, you know, consistently by writing a journal like once a week or every 2 weeks, you start to gain an awareness of what your emotions are and when they appear, how often they appear and stuff like that. And it really helps you appreciate what's sort of going on in the emotional landscape in your own mind. And you start to learn how to navigate it then. Mm. Okay, I'm having a bad day. Oh, it's probably because it's similar to that thing that happened a couple of months ago. And that really f***ed me off. So this time I'm going to do this. So it makes you behave differently having that self-awareness. Because we don't know we have a problem until we know that we've got a problem.
But that I have been contemplating journaling. And I haven't actually started it yet. But I definitely think I'm going to. Because One of the issues
with borderline personality disorder,
you think very black and white. There's no grey areas
in life. And so if I give you an example of a scenario
that happened to me recently, I was at a wedding. And so myself and my husband have fertility issues. And this man went, so do you have children? And I was like, no, can't have them. Because I'm fed up of people asking me the question. And so I'm just like, you know what? I'm just telling you the truth. No, we can't have children. And they went, are you sad about that? Well, yeah. And I was just like, I mustn't react. I must walk away. And you know when you're like, I just want to like reach over and kind of shake you as if to say, what were you thinking of asking the question in the first place? And then to follow it up with, does that make you sad? No, I'm perfectly fine about everything. It's all good. In the middle of a wedding. I'm like, right, can't make a scene, can't do anything. And then I was like, well, I then spent all my time beating myself up about, well, why didn't I confront him? Why didn't I say, you know, that isn't really an appropriate question to ask. And so because of that, I'm like, well, maybe it didn't really get to me because of this black and white thinking, but it did get to me. And kind of like working that whole situation out in my head, but putting it in a journal would probably have made me understand it a bit better than what I did, which was literally walk away and cry. Because I was like, I can't deal with this. This is just ridiculous.
It was a difficult situation.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel that if I don't say anything at the time something happens, then I'm not being true to myself. Yes. However, when you think about it, it's in the middle of the wedding.
Yeah.
You can't really go, you know what, I'm going to kick off right now at my sister's wedding. It's just not the time nor the place.
Yes.
So when you think about it like that, you're like, well, no, because you weighed up the options. You went, it's not a good time to attack.
Yeah, you did the right thing.
I've got to, exactly. But yet I spent, I think it was 3 or 4 weeks beating myself up about it in terms of, I even went to my therapist. I was like, I did this and now I think I don't, like, I haven't confronted him and stuff, and I'm probably never going to see this guy ever again, and I don't really care about his opinion, but
yes.
Exactly. And you're like, ah, oh, well, yeah, so I think maybe journaling could be a good thing for me to start, because then I could work that out.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's also another thing that I learned in counseling as well, because I've always really struggled with confrontation or what I perceive to be confrontation in my head. So if I had to have a difficult conversation with someone, like, I would just straight up avoid it. Like, that conversation's like never going to happen, basically.
Yeah.
So in my training, I learned that it's called like an empty chair. So you can either do it this way, I'll explain, or there's another way. So you can literally sit in a room with an empty chair and talk to the chair as if it was the person that you really wanted to have that conversation with. And you'd almost role play out the conversation, even though it's quite difficult and it's quite emotionally challenging. You would say exactly what you wanted to say to that person in a way that would not be inflammatory, but also get across what you wanted to say.
Mm.
Now, there's another approach you can do as well, which is what's called writing an open letter.
Mm.
So what you do is you'd write a letter to the person that you want to speak to. And you effectively articulate what it is that's bothering you, and you say how you feel about that. So you'd write it all out in a letter and address it to the person, but never send it to them. Because that way, it's a way of getting out all of the emotion. It's, you know, very similar mechanism to journaling. It's getting it all out of your head and giving you some emotional bandwidth to think again.
Yeah.
And there's also another sort of great exercise that you can do with regards to self-awareness. And it's very simple to grab a A4 piece of paper and turn it so that it's horizontal and not portrait.
Yeah.
You draw a line in the middle of the piece of paper and you effectively are creating a timeline. So on the very far right-hand side is today's date. And on the very far left-hand side is when you were born. And what you do, above the line, you write down any positive milestones that have happened in your life. And you write down how you feel about those positive milestones. And you write down roughly what age you were when that milestone happened. And what you do is you go through the timeline and you plot out as many of those milestones from the day you were born. So these are milestones that you can remember from the day that you were born up until today. And then what you do is below the line, you do the same exercise for the negative milestones. So for me, for example, because I was assaulted when I was 16, I might write down that.
Yeah. And
I might write down the emotion that was with that, which is I was like, I felt humiliated. I felt, you know, this, that. And then I would write down the age, which was I was 16. So, you know, what you do is you go through that exercise and you really quickly start to realize where you're at on an emotional level and what you start to really gain an appreciation of what's happened to you over a lifetime and really accept those bits of you. And it's a really great self-awareness exercise. And again, I learned that whilst I was doing my training.
Yeah, I'm going to give that a go. That sounds amazing.
What I would say is it's quite an emotionally taxing exercise to do. So only do it when you're in sort of, when you're not in a distressed state or anxious or sad, because it can bring up quite difficult emotions sometimes. So
I can imagine.
If you're already in a state that's not good, you don't want to aggravate that further. So that's the only caveat I would say.
Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. Knowing my luck, I'm like, right, I'm going to do it now. Oh no, that was the wrong time to do it. Yeah. Which is highly likely.
It's very nice because it brings up very happy memories and that sort of thing. But, you know, it also helps you to address some of the things that have happened that, you know, potentially weren't great things.
Mm.
And it's a really great foundation. I would say that with journaling, a really great place is to start to get to know what's going on for you and who you are emotionally at the moment.
No, I'm definitely going to try those, I think. Both of those were on my to-do list.
Good. I certainly got a lot out of them. I still journal now. Like, I try and do one, like, once a week. Mm. I'm not, like, religious with it, but if I don't do it every week, it's every 2 weeks at least, because I just find it really healthy for me to be able to check in with myself and, you know, sort of get a grip on where I'm at. Emotionally, I guess.
Yeah, no, I definitely think that's a fantastic idea and something that I will try, and I will let everyone know how it goes.
Yeah, I think you'd do really well.
Fantastic. As this is a book podcast, I was wondering, are there any top books that you would recommend for myself and our listeners?
Top books, of course. I don't read so much these days, but I did start out the year reading quite a few. The standout book for me would be Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway by Susan Jeffers.
Yep.
That is one of my all-time favourite book. Like, talk about a woman with some serious compassion. That book absolutely oozes empathy and compassion for anyone that's felt fear of any kind throughout your life. It might be a fear of public speaking. It might be a fear of asking someone out on a date. It might be a fear of intimacy. It might be a fear of letting people into your life. It could be anything. She pretty much covers it in that book and really breaks fear down into something that's understandable and relatable through sort of real life examples from her own life that really make you think about the way you assess and evaluate fear, and it really makes you also think about where how it stands in your life, like how much is it a part of your life? And for me, when I read it at the time, it was actually, fear was quite a prominent emotion in my life when I read it at the start of this year. So it was just really good timing that I read it, and it's one of the best books that I've ever read in my life.
Well, fantastic. I will put a link to that in the show notes. I have to admit that it's on my bookshelf. I haven't actually got to reading it yet, so maybe this will help it get up the ladder quicker as a personal recommendation. But I'm conscious of the fact that I've kept you talking for so long. This has been so fascinating. I am so grateful that you came on and talked so openly about your journey and what you're up to now. If there is any chance we could get you back on the show at a later date, we would absolutely love it.
Yeah, count me in for sure.
Fantastic. So in the meantime, just remember, it is okay not to be okay.
And it's okay to talk.
Certainly is. Thank you so much. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Mental Health Book Club podcast. If you need additional help with your mental health, please contact the Samaritans on 116 123, which is a 24-hour helpline. And if you need additional information about mental health issues, please visit Mind at mind.org.uk. And if you are still listening to this part of the podcast, please tweet at @mhbc_podcast or email hello@mentalhealthbookclub.com with the words, "I kept listening." And the first person to do this will receive a Mental Health Foundation green ribbon and a handmade bookmark by Mary's Tats.